Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.
Hi there. My name is Johnny Meatsack. Like you, I once held a normal life in a normal place with a normal job. I had a normal family. Hi, Karen. And simply thought I'd live my normal life to a normal death. One day, however, I experienced this thing called gnosis, a direct revelation of a truer but distant reality, and the realization that my reality was a fabricated construct. I discovered my life was a lie and my identity was as synthetic as Alexa or Siri, and that the universe itself was a penitentiary built by cosmic overlords to trap and feed off my dormant, authentic consciousness. Jiminy crickets, I thought. My only choices were to join an awareness-killing cult like a political party, or just kill myself. But by some luck or providence, Sophia's grace, I discovered AM Bitnostic Radio. Despite the host's creepy monologues and the show's blasphemous topics, I was able to develop the ability to uncover my authentic consciousness and deal with this prison planet. In other words, this gnosis grew until I was a fully divine being, no longer in the thrall of entities called Archons and their soul-numbing, amnesia-causing power. Thank you, Aeon Byte, for waking me up to my true eternal nature. Everything is still normal these days, except me, Johnny Meatsack. I'm on the adventure of many lifetimes to be completely liberated from the Black Iron Prison.
What the fuck? What the fuck?
We are all Johnny Meatsack in the Konoma. And welcome everybody officially to Aeon Byte. I hope you're writing your own gospel. I hope you're living your own myth. We're running with those searching for the truth and avoiding those who have found it. And it's been a while since I brought up the introduction with Johnny Meatsack. Why? Because YouTube keeps striking any tune I put, and with copyright issues. And I finally got some AI music that works. For those of you who watch Justin Sledge's channel, he's had the same issue. The algorithms have gone crazy, and who knows? I mean, the same, I will get a copyright song. I will copyright it myself, and then the powers that be will say, oh, no, it belongs to somebody else. So, but anyway, yes, we are indeed Johnny Meatsack in this crazy, mad world. And I am still Miguel Connor, your pompous of gnosis, and good to see everybody on this Mars Day. And as always, I see people already in the chat. If you have a question for our guest or complain against Vance and I, or you just want to hear yourself think, because people in the chat always have such amazing things to say, please super chat them so we can separate thee and get to thy logos. So tonight, I'm very excited about the discussion, and I'm very excited about our guest. We are joined by Paul Joseph Rovelli. Paul, thank you very much for coming to the Virtual Alexandria.
Glad to be here, and what a great introduction. I didn't expect the Johnny Meatsack routine, but it was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. We do what we can here. And with us, too, we've got Johnny Meatsack, Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. And for our vegetarians out there, you could be Johnny Vegetable Sack, right?
You can be anything you want in this world, it seems. Just declare it. You here we are.
What are you?
So awesome. Awesome. Not much housekeeping. Yes, tonight, again, very excited about the topic because, as I often say in the show, it's how these ancient mysteries manifest for a modern meaning. And that's what we here try to do. And those of us who are mining those ancient traditions for inner knowing, that's what we're trying to do. And tomorrow we'll actually have a show on modern Taoism from a guest who will tell us how he brings Taoism into a modern context that is useful for a modern crowd. So I guess that's the theme this week. So first of all, let's start with in the beginning, Paul. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to become a heretic.
First, mommy met daddy.
a little farther.
Oh, okay. I was getting biblical. I've always been a spiritual person. I mean, I could get very wordy and describe that whole journey. But I, try to keep it simple and concise. You know, as a teenager, I began to turn away from a devout relationship with the Roman Catholic Church and my family. And I came to a point in college where I got more concerned about the Western mystery tradition. At the time, I didn't think there was a yoga for the West, really, per se. And so to me, it became surrealist art. And, you know, when you got that far, you know, into aspects of consciousness, I thought this was thrilling. Eventually, I came to more mystical studies, more magical studies, and saw that what all of that was about was us getting to know ourselves and, you know, come to this life in full being and full awareness of that being.
Beautifully said, indeed. And you are the founder of the church, the Gnostic Church of LVX.
I hope I'm Gnostic pronouncing. Church of Light.
Of Light, okay.
Lux is the Latin word for light.
Okay, okay. Well, tell the audience a little bit about that. Tell us about this.
As a Roman Catholic, even in those days, I went to Mass before I was, insisted on going to Mass to the point where I was hearing Latin Mass at 4 years old. I've always wanted a priesthood to be some kind of whatever. I just moved in that spirit, you know? And as I came through magic, a lot of that deals with lodge. These lodges are run by young people who are not adepts. They are festering pits of decadence. And I thought that I wanted to create something that brought the whole Gnostic concept of what magic is, they're synonyms. I wanted to take that out of that decadent setting. And I thought to myself, a church is the American tradition. You know, we just don't have to put Jesus into it. We can put a more wholesome spirit into it. And so I'm really trying to create a new idea. And we proudly promote ourselves as the first fully owned and operating Gnostic church on the continents of the Americas. And we are here in this fertile land of the Northeast where all the new religions have started on this continent, from the Transcendentalists to the Mormons to the Bible Belt fundamentalists. All of this is in this soil. And, you know, I live, you know, a stone's throw from Robert Frost's home and another stone's throw from Herman Melville's, you know, so
Talk about a couple of Gnostics.
Yeah. You know, and I did 2 years of sermons at our church on Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I'm preparing a bunch on William James now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. You just said magic and gnosis are the same. And I like that because, for example, I was writing my Elvis book and I have a section on magic. And I was like, you know, there's all these perspectives from Crowley's to traditional magic. So I harassed Gordon White and he came up with a definition. And his definition is magic is the felt sense that our role in the cosmos is co-creative. And that reminds me of Tobias Chertin, who once said, separately, gnosis is simply being a co-creator with the universe. So what do you think about these this way of looking at it, Paul?
It's an interesting speculation. I'm more to say a parallel idea, the holographic theory. Mm-hmm. We are each that one God. You, each of us, as is everything. You know, if God is infinite, then there's nothing that is not God. So in that sense, we each are identical to the one divine. We each are that one divine. You know, holographic theory, each little part of the hologram is identical to the whole. So in our holy books, you know, it's mentioned that the one became the all. So the one no longer is. The one is the all now. The one is not.
Very true. Yeah, well said. And your church is based on Thelema, right? How is it different from Crowley? How is it similar? Tell us about that.
I hate to say it's based on Thelema. Mm-hmm. Yes, Thelemic holy books, the holy books of Thelema are essential documents. We could talk about why in another context. But, you know, I just got done mentioning all these American transcendentalists. Ralph Waldo Emerson was the first American Gnostic. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a place that's about the self, you know, and in when we promote the church, we say it's a place where we facilitate the genius in each other. Yeah, Crowley's one of our saints, if you would. But recognize also that Crowley is a dead master, along with all the other masters that are dead, even the fake Jesus. But we should be today about the living masters. Like you said in your introduction, I hope you're all writing your own holy books. It's up to each generation to make its own contact with the divine. Yes, Crowley did that contact. The holy books of Thelema come by. There are other, you know, I'm deeply admired of The Secret Doctrine by Blavatsky. That also is, you know, preternatural communication, another holy book. So we all have to get to that space to put us into Thelema or into Crowley. I think is a big misnomer, misplacement. You know, again, just start with the transcendentalists, and how many others could we actually list?
Quite a few. And when you say, I actually have a friend, Sean. Yeah, he's gaga over Emerson, and he's made some good arguments that he was a Gnostic. But tell us, why would you say Emerson is a Gnostic? What did he embody? What did he discover? What did he leave the world?
Off the top of my head, Emerson's essay on will and career, I can't remember the name of it. But he talks about how you, shall we say, fall into your career. And Crowley also writes that, connecting that with the will, as Emerson does. Hmm. But I think Emerson couches that in a very rich context. We're not talking about career as, you know, this is what I do for a living. I pump gas at the local gas station, or I have a cushy little office place and I'm funneling money from the safe every week. career is connected with what you do in life. And it may be that, you know, the reality is for a lot of us that maybe your day job isn't so glamorous. And you may be that one that comes home and then, you know, builds, you know, paper airplanes. I think that's really essential that, you know, you find a way to follow your own passion. As Campbell said, follow your bliss. Mm-hmm. And however you do that, whether it's a more complex life, you're putting a family together, you're, you know, pursuing your passion, you still got to work your day job, whatever that might be. But most importantly, it's what you put into the world, whether that's raising your kid or, you know, those paper airplanes become museum pieces and you raise culture and art. Some will do greater in our society than others. Some will become a Crowley or an Isaac Newton or, you know, even, you know, a Musk or a Trump. I don't want to call them great people, but they have an effect on history. Hitler had an effect on history, you know, just as Joan of Arc and Beethoven and Picasso. So when you contribute to the history of the world, there's the greatest ones, and the rest of society supports that in some way. And we do all operate together, co-creators, if you will. Just some are going to create at a higher level, be more significant, and others will really fade from history.
Yeah, and you don't know when even history will remember you, even if it matters. William Blake died an unknown. Herman Melville is another great example.
William Blake still proves himself a master of the temple. He's in history. Herman Melville is in history. They died unknowns. You know, Van Gogh only sold one painting before he died. Yeah.
John Dee was forgotten for centuries until somebody had to, you know, it was actually, I think, Crowley and some of the others. It was like, wait a second, we kind of miss this really important magician over here.
But then there's Caesar and Alexander and, you know, and you know, we could just go on with great Greco-Roman philosophers and et cetera. So genius is, you know, a wonderful story. Beethoven is at some court event. They're having a party. And he's being rude and brash with absolutely everybody. And somebody pulls him aside and says, Ludwig, so you're being rude. You're in the presence of dukes and duchesses, and you're just being rude to everybody. And he said, Beethoven replies, he says, throughout history, there have always been kings and queens and royalty and all that. There's only one Beethoven.
Oh, wow. I love that. I love that.
To have that force and passion of genius, we all have to have it to even do anything. To ask a girl out on a date, you got to think you're somebody worth dating. That's the inner moving out into the world. And we come from the inner and go out. We don't leave our bodies when we die. You know, we go in. We go into the immaterial worlds where, you know, the unconscious dwells, where the collective unconscious dwells. Even the collective conscious.
Yep. Go back to the source, back to the womb in a reverse manner. And your church, I'm assuming, is what are your rituals? Sacramental?
We have a monthly service we call the Rosicrucian Mass. I give a sermon in it. It's a, you know, it's a knowledge lecture. We have a whole intro where we adore the Bayun God. We don't worship, but we do adore the Bayun God, which is the great father, mother God that creates creates the magical child, creates the Augies, creates the Adam Kadmon in Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And we have a little back and forth, you know, call and answer kind of thing where we kind of go through certain virtues. And then we have a doctrine of the four yods. It's, you know, read after the Eucharist. So we do a Eucharist of the five elements. And then these doctrine of the four yods, intuition, intelligence, we, you know, they're, you know, we just describe them in interesting ways. I really co-opt a lot of different sources into making a rite that is Eucharistic, but that you can take your family to. With, you know, it's a, maybe a little heady for a child, but what isn't? And yet you can raise them in practical advice, because Gnostics don't command your behavior. They don't give you laws for virtue. You know, those you got to figure out for yourselves. You know, we always say when the spirit leaves the temple, morality rushes in to fill the void. So we don't teach or preach morality, but we will give advice, you know, on how to act intelligently and impeccably, etc. We want you in dialogue with us, you know, as a congregant to use us to cajole each other. You know, two buddies on a baseball team, each one wants to get a better batting average than the other, even though they're the best of friends, right? They challenge each other to this contest, you know, and they both want to win. But, you know, what they do is they both do win. They both get better and better. You know, the great literary cabals, the Beatniks, the Cabaret Voltaire, the Transcendentalists, these are all groups that as individuals they rose because they acted in community. And we're about community. Congregation is a word for community. Church is a word for community. So, you know what I'm saying? If you're a member of our church congregation, you're a member of our community of community, or our community community.
Yeah, you got to create that egregore. And have you run afoul into any of the more conservative denominations for what you do?
We're in a redneck land where fundamentalism has thrived. We've had our building attacked. We get death threats. Oh, I got kicked out of the school system teaching from these death threats. We've faced it. Okay, we're the first Gnostic church fully owned and operating on the continents of America. We're just going to get it.
ridiculous. But hey, what are you going to do? You gain the attention of the God of this world, that's going to happen.
Yeah, well, we live in a superstitious world. We have to deal with that superstition.
Knock on wood while you say that, for sure.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. I am very superstitious. Going to the, what interests you, or why do you feel, did you gravitate towards Gnostic thought, that ancient way of inner knowing, as Stefan Heller called it? What do you like about Gnosticism, classical Gnostic, any Gnosticism?
Well, classical Gnosticism, there's a few elements that we can take from it. There's some interesting ways that we can reinterpret it, because I hate what Pagels did with it. But for the most part, the real Gnostic teachings of the classical era are not known. We can speculate on them if we want. But all these groups out there today taking this shit literally, they're just out to lunch, you know, and they're not coming back the rest of the afternoon. I'm sorry. You know, it's Gnostic fundamentalism. How much more stupid can you get? You know, and I got people that hate my guts for it. I'm kicked off Gnostic groups, you know, because I'm like, do you really think that angels of light came down and gave you the history of heaven? Here's the history of heaven first. I mean, really, when you look at the Valentinian syzygies, a lot of them are psychic energies, parts of our own psyche that psychologists talk about. So do you really, you know, why did they choose these names? These guys were inventing this stuff, but they were trying to convey something else. So I'm not going to call it Holy Writ, you know, the ancient Gnostic scriptures, just like I wouldn't call any part of the Bible or the Quran or the Tanakh. These things are literary and I think important to understand from a literary perspective, but there's a big difference between that and prior human intelligence, you know, which I think modern man is waking up to.
Yeah, all religion is art. And even like the great William Barnstone said, the Gnostics were poets first. And in those times, a poet was the same as a shaman. He didn't deal with linear time or rational thought. They might know it, but that was it. And I certainly agree on that one too, very much on the impetus of the ancient Gnostics too. And when it comes down to it, as I say, that's why I don't get too rattled, Paul. We have a friend, Anon Omos. He's in the chat. He's been kicked out about 5 Gnostic groups for at least just saying his opinion, even if he starts with, in my opinion, or it just boom.
That's never enough.
No. God, don't have an opinion in this world. But it's the old saying. Don't cast
pearls before swine either.
Yeah. It's the old saying, the map is not the territory. All models are probably wrong. Some models are useful. The Gnostic model is very useful, but we're probably way off of what Valentinus was doing 2,000 years ago. We do the best we can. And as Alan Moore famously said, all history is fiction. So we're telling ourselves a story at the end of the day.
And the narrative is key because it's a measure of our being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the story we tell, I think, is important. Now, there's, at least in the way I grew up, there was always 2 stories. There was, the, shall we say, the popular music and underground music. Mm-hmm. And in that, the underground people were cool. They were more educated about music. They understood art and how it, immersed itself in music. Whereas above ground, the popular stuff, well, that's, you can figure that out in a second and a half, whether you like it or not, it's catchy, but large groups of people love it, and in that same way, the Gnostics dealt with that because there were 3 types of people, right? So there were some that really could transmit the Gnosis. They were the pneumatics. The psychics were the ones that could feel the verify that Gnosis in a sense. And then, of course, the Hylics made sure the church was clean, they just wanted to be part of the club. And, of course, it's the Hylics you have to produce if you want to grow the religion. And that means, most religions become very organized cults, and how to get the lower dumb caste to be devoutly into this, because they can experience that much of it, and they're just, it's all just keeping up with the Joneses and being cool.
Very true. Very true. It's the old Eric Hoffer famous quote, all great causes start as a movement, turn into a business, and degenerate into a racket. I think that's cosmic law. Usually I hope you don't mind doing this, Vance, but there's somebody in the chat that's asking a lot of questions. I think she's seeking sense of soul. And you see that, Vance?
Many churches are also considered apostolic Johannine churches. That's kind of a pseudo-Masonic idea that grew into its own narrative, not really based on history. It's more based on narrative, I think. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, because the Apostolic Johannine Church comes from that Johannine tradition with Pike and all those cats, when the Freemasons came around, where they latched their wisdom to the Apostle John or the Beloved Society. So
the 3 Saints John, as you go through the Masonic initiation.
Very true.
I forget.
Very true. And a lot of these churches come from the French revival of the 19th century. They're great movements and certainly had some mystics behind them when they started. So I like them. But again, that's... And Crowley was a priest in the French tradition, and he was a free. So there's a lot of interbreeding, isn't there, Paul?
Yeah. Well, the Western mystery tradition is really complicated. I think the misunderstanding that goes with Crowley is that they don't see him in his place. They only see the yellow press journalism, and they feel they don't have to experience his work. And so, you know, he was whatever kind of Luddite they've turned him into this week. But a far more complex thing goes with all these guys. What's the name of that Russian mystic who was a real scoundrel? Rasputin, was it? Yeah. You know, real scoundrel, just, you know, scumbag. Even if we took the yellow press of what they say about him, they've said it about so many others. You know, and some of them were stupid enough to get caught doing foolish things, like Blavatsky, who started doing fake seances just to see, help her get her message across, you know. And that really ruined the ease of which her work could have reached people.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
I think the blind followers are the ones that are the most threatened by the yellow press. You know, if a true Gnostic, in my mind, we'll listen to everyone and pick out what's valuable to them, what resonates with them, not just try to copy them. If you want to copy Crowley, then you'd be on drugs and do all this other stuff and ride the beast. And
like most Elamites today. You know, most of them, you know, most of these Thelemic temples are brothels and worse.
That's terrible. Do you have any addresses?
I was going to make the same joke.
The whole list is published on the net. So,
Eyes Wide Shut Church of Gnosticism.
Yeah. If it was Eyes Wide Shut, I might be there. That one's really good.
See, Heilig. There you go. The Heilig.
Yeah. Well, the Heiligs are, you know, 99% of our society, when you think about it. Okay, most people, religion is something kept in a box for Sunday, and even that for a very small number nowadays. These people really care more about pleasure and pain. They run from pain towards pleasure. So work is pain, run home, watch TV. You know, in between, I can scroll my cell phone. And it's all mindless stuff. They won't go through the work of education, much less the more intense work of inner growth. You know, that comes with great struggle and is just not there. And you look, even, you know, people we receive into our church groups, and I'm sure you guys run into it all the time. Well, what do you guys believe in? I don't believe in anything. Well, do you believe in God? No. Okay. I there's a process we can talk about where one can come to know God, you know, and you'll eventually find out that it's you. It's really you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in three requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.
But who are we?
God's will and not mine, but thy will be done. Bullshit.
See, the Heilig thinks that when you say God is you, he thinks he's the body of him, and the Heilig part of him is God. That's
no, the Heilig part. The Heilig part of him needs to believe in a God out there. He or she needs to understand that there's a reason to behave. Okay, and all churches have done this since time immemorial. No matter what their structure is, all religious leaders, because religious leaders work with the government, and the government can't afford to hire enough police to keep you from beating your wife when she burns dinner. Okay. So what the guy says is, well, I can't beat my wife because Jesus is not going to let me into heaven. But man, would I like to get, you know. And then the Catholic, of course, goes, oh, I wanted to beat my wife. I got to confess this shit.
You know? Sad but true, huh?
Yeah. So to compel decent behavior and make them go to work so that we have a civilization, because we need a civilization or we'd all be, you know, suffer the tyranny of nature, right? Pure Plato there. Right. So they build civilization, and that's a context for those who are pneumatic to work in, because that gives us a chance to give something to the world, and it takes that psychic inner group of people to recognize that and bring that to flower. Okay.
It's like a playpen. See, the churches are playpens. Most of the Orthodox churches are playpens for people who, if you could let them out of the playpen, well, they'd ruin the house.
It is a playpen, right? Because they're praying to something that doesn't exist, and they're using it as a hope against a life that they're dead to and know nothing about. And whatever it makes them feel good about themselves when they finally get done, so they can go back to work on Monday morning.
At the same time, do you believe there are spiritual forces high above? Powers and principalities,
at least.
Yeah. Other entities that are not embodied? That
I don't believe in anything, so we run into foul there. Of anything
do you suspect?
Have you experienced? Have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? No, I'm just kidding.
See, Kyle. Oh, no. Excuse first of all, let's look at the archons, the bad forces. Okay. Are these really bad forces? Because in magic, they're called the planetary spirits. Mm-hmm. You know, they're Mars and Jupiter and the days of the week and all that. They're the seven original emanations that Blavatsky talks about. And they're part of this universe. Now, unlike the ancient Gnostics who created a duality that was really built off Plato's idea of a world of perfect forms, which made this world sin and a mistake. Okay, so then the archons of this world are part of that sin. But if, like a modern Gnostic, you say to yourselves, I'm not spirit trapped in matter. I'm not trapped in this body. I'm spirit liberated in matter. And because of this body, I can do things. And so these planetary spirits are then the leaders of different factions of our psyche. You know, Mars is the warrior, right? And we all have a warrior spirit. It's part of us. It might not be the dominant or a dominant set of motives in us, among the motives in us, but all the seven planetary spirits are motives inside of us. It's only when those motives are evil that you have to curse the archons, right? So we have these modes of operating, these psychic energies, and not just the seven gods. We have all sorts of psychic energies, right? We have the sex drive. We have the need to learn, to know. We have creative impulses, even procreative impulses. You know, these are all parts of a complicated psyche that is the mind of man, and mind is another word for soul. It's just that you gotta make it. You gotta build that soul yourself. You're given just a root soul. It's just the consciousness of all the mitochondria in your body. That's really all it is. As you phenomenally investigate the world, as you begin to build the mind, as you begin to then from that intellect learn to create and feel, then you become conscious. You've now created a soul. Most people die a zombie. They've never lived for a minute. That's sad.
Very true. Yeah, very true. But what is it to be alive, would you say? What is it to be truly alive?
That's a question we each must answer for ourselves, especially as Gnostics. Mm-hmm. Right? You must bring meaning to your own life. You must make choice after choice after choice. From the first breath, you made a choice. You know what I'm saying? Should I cry? I didn't like that spanking. You know what I'm saying? I felt pain. So finally I'm hungry, or I'm going to date this girl, not that girl, or I'm going to take this job and not that job. You know, so life is a whole complex of choices with every interaction. As Crowley says, every interaction is a sacrament, whether good, bad, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. You know, and each one affords us a new direction in the next step that we're going to take.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, well said. It's the old saying, oh, what's the meaning of life? To find your gift. And what's the purpose of life? No. Give it away.
See, you don't have a gift. You got to create that too. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's no essence before you were born with a destiny. You know, you're born rudderless in a world that's chaotic and makes absolutely no sense. And you're put there, you know, you just put there. You just find yourself there. Okay. And then you begin to make choices and you begin to interact with the world. And from that, you build your identity. You know, when I was in college, you know, I was in and after college, I was in three pretty strong bands. And I wanted to be the next Jim Morrison, the next Patti Smith, my personal goddess and savior. Oh, wow. And while those bands got some respect, you know, we went but so far for various reasons. And so it was like I was crushed because that was my ambition. I couldn't wait to write the next song, to figure out the next musical phrase, you know. Mm-hmm. And I realized now that I was just an idea man all along. I made adjustments to that. I started getting more deeply into the philosophy that I was using to write my music, you know, and more of the aesthetic philosophy that I was using got transformed into an aesthetic of my soul that I began to more consciously create. And I realized, well, yeah, I was born some root talent in the piano. But, you know, I never, ever became, you know, a quality piano player, you know. And I realize now as I'm writing my sermons for the church, as I'm writing all these other epistles, that I'm putting ideas together and I'm creating myself. And in the process, I think if I connect with anybody, they'll be inspired by that and to create themselves. So the world changed me from the rock musician to the church leader that I am today. And that was, you know, my will wasn't preset. I had to respond and make choices and interact with the world. And the world, you know, eventually slapped me and says, you're not going to be the next Led Zeppelin. You know, you'll still be working for a living. You know, don't quit your day job, as they say. Which anything they say, no.
Yeah, yeah. Vince, do you have a question or comment? I got to let this cat out. Lackey.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of the reason that people that are Gnostics think that there are archons in the world and so forth is because of things like you just related, where they can imagine themselves as something, but they don't seem to have the power of being it. There's some sort of inherent limitation when they were born on their talent or attitude or whatever it was. Maybe it was the way they grew up. But, you know, I think Gnostics, or at least the way I think of it, Gnostics believe that since we all have the inner spark, that we have the potential of being whatever we want, so to speak. But in this world, we're limited, restricted. There's the Saturn influence. You talk about the archons, right? Saturn, the great limiter of the archons. So what do you think about that concept?
Well, Saturn is the great discipliner. Without Saturn, I didn't practice my scales and exercises. You know, without Saturn, I didn't read the books that were going to help me to answer certain questions. I didn't learn how to write and think. Okay, so Saturn is as good an archon as any. You know, when that guy punched me in the face, you know, in a bar fight, without Mars, I didn't have the strength to respond. Without Venus, I didn't have the subtlety to attract my wife or to create a piece of art. So each of these archons, again, are just psychic forces. These people that blame the archons, it's just the blame game. It's just, more devils than the Christians have.
Well, yeah, but look at Saturn. If you have to be disciplined to practice and whatever, then maybe you don't have the love to practice. I think people that are really become great, they love it so much, you'd have to have the discipline to stop them from practicing.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you asked me to perform or to do, 2 hours of exercises, I do 2 hours of exercise. I love my piano. My piano knows all my pain and all my joy. I put it all in there. So it's, yes, genius is something you love to do. When you find your bliss, you find it though unconsciously. I didn't find my bliss when I was playing rock leader, right? But I was doing something that was coming from inside of me. Mm-hmm. I had shaped that into who I am today over time. Now I know that all along I've been an idea man. I just did it in different ways. And who knows? I got 20 years left. Maybe 20 years from now, I'll start doing something different, then I'll die.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you, what parts of the ancient Gnostics, do you embrace in your church and, and personally? For example, we've talked about the archons already. The divine spark, I think you feel that we all have a divine spark, right? Because you were speaking about the one.
Well, the divine spark is the animating force, right? Spirit. It's nondescript. It has no character. It's non-individualized in any way. It's just spirit. It pervades everything in the universe already. It's just somehow coalesced into the body to animate the body. And there's still work to do in congealing that, because every last cell in your body has a mitochondria, which is the root form of life. I just had the words in my head, the prokaryotes and eukaryotes. These are symbiotic beings that live inside of each cell and have a consciousness. They called it the midichlorians in Star Wars. Okay, but it's mitochondria.
Don't remind me, and I'm thinking of Jar Jar Binks.
Not Jar Jar.
One of my favorite characters, really. Jar Jar Binks, yes.
Well, how is that different than that? Just the science, what the scientists call energy, like says energy equals MC squared, blah 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 blah. That's the Heilig level description. The way it sounds.
No, everything is energy. Energy. There's nothing that's not energy. We have to start with one misnomer, at least from my perspective. And that is, there's no other world besides this one. And when I say world, I should say there's no other universe besides this one. Okay, so that's everything. There's no hidden world above the dome of the sky like the ancients believed.
That's a difference then, the way you see it and the way the ancients saw it.
The ancients saw it, the sky dome was there, and there was a different world. But I would argue that that's really the Buddhist influence coming into the Middle East. The Sethians didn't see it that way at all, even though they played with the Valentinians for a little while. The Sethians really saw it much more Kabbalistically. There were other groups, they all get lumped in called Gnostics, but none of them were. If there was one thing that I think dwelled among them, was that your own inner experience is the real experience. There's no outer experience except for what you put into the world. Morality, I think, is the most important, because the ancient Gnostics, like modern Gnostics, do not believe in morality per se. In other words, we're not going to give you a list of thou shalts and thou shalt nots. And think about it. Everybody chooses their morality based on their own experience, which is Gnostic. Gnostics rely on experience. 30% of this country refused to accept the law and do the right thing and smoked weed. Now it's legal. Okay, I got a roach in my hand, as a matter of fact. And so we do choose our morality. You know, for many, smoking weed is still today immoral. Right? You know, there's an interesting joke. An alcoholic, and this is a very Christian Abrahamic joke, an alcoholic, a nymphomaniac, and a pothead all die at the same time. And they go to heaven and they meet Peter at the holy gates. And Peter says to him, you know, I'm just sick of this. You guys are allowed into heaven just because you went to church every Sunday. So I'm going to prove you guys. He puts each of them in their own room. And he says, you got to sit in this room with your poison for 1 year without touching it. And only then will I let you into heaven. So he puts the alcoholic in with a lot of booze. He puts the nymphomaniac in with a lot of beautiful men. And he puts the pothead into a room with a lot of weed. So at the end of the year, he goes back and he finds the alcoholic passed out on the floor. He goes into the nymphomaniac's quarters and all the men there are exhausted. So he knows what's going on there. And he goes to the pothead's room and nothing's been touched. And he says, you're the one I thought most of all would fail and go to hell. So what happened? And the pothead looks up at him and says, got a light? And as I think about that joke, that's the choice I would make. Me and the alcoholic go down to hell and hang out with the nymphomaniac at the bar. You know, because, I mean, what the fuck do you want to go to heaven for? To do nothing? Because you can't do anything up there. It's a nondescript world.
Yeah, I always wondered about that. Harps, yeah. Harp playing.
Yeah. And God sits there all day, the grand narcissist who has surrounded by angels and go, you're wonderful, you're marvelous, you're wonderful, you're marvelous. I just translated that into English, by the way. So he says, oh, this world is a bad world. I ain't even going to come to it. You know, I ain't wasting my time. This is Plato's world of perfect forms turned into religion. Okay. And theologians, you know, early theologians in the medieval ages, because Christianity doesn't really fully form until about 700. But, you know, they thought God must be good. This world must be evil. Because it's imperfect and changing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there's sin. What a concept. I can do something that would displease a God. What a concept. I mean, that worked for ancient man. You could put the scarecrow in your garden. He's hanging on the cross. You can blame, you know, the God of, you know, grapefruits that your grapefruit didn't grow. And, again, always the blame game going on in some such way. It wasn't me, except that, you know, I forgot to give, you know, the God of orange juice, you know, a glass of Tropicana. You know, the whole superstitious notion of belief and something out there that's not God, some better world. This is the best of all possible worlds. We're already living in it.
Well, how do you know that, though? How do you really know that? I mean, we all we know is what we see, you know, what our five senses see and so forth. We don't really know if there's any other worlds or based on totally different rules, laws, physics. We don't know.
I know the world is the amalgam of all our thoughts. So in that, the world is exactly as it should be. Now, as we strive to come to consciousness, because remember, that's only some thousands of years old, when early man first started hearing a voice in his head and the stream of thought began to click on, because that is consciousness. Without that stream of thought, you are unconscious. There's no consciousness. Animals have some limited thought. They know I and not I. They understand certain things, but they're still incredibly narcissistic. And humans, for the most part, are still incredibly animalistic in that regard. So as the consciousness began to click on in a few. Well, they started to become the first shamans, the first priests, the first kings, the first rulers. You know, and they spoke for the gods. They made sense. But we're coming to a point now where everybody's starting to experience that stream of thought. There are still some people that don't have it. But for the most part, everybody's got it. Now, what the hell do we do with it? Well, thankfully, some people studied philosophy and thought about thought. You know, and these become the early Gnostics. They become the ones who begin to realize there's something going inside of us. And we can find Gnosticism in many people, you know, that were great thinkers in various traditions, even if they were still somehow subject to that superstitious belief structure. They still wrote through it. You know, the alchemists saw it, and they still started every paragraph with, you know, by the light of Jesus Christ, because they had to. The founding fathers, half of them didn't believe in Jesus at all. But, you know, when they wrote a letter to their friend, they, in the light of our Lord Jesus Christ, you know, and say, well, how can you say he's not a Christian when he wrote that? Because that's how you wrote. That's Dear Sally. Nice to see you today.
Yeah, what did you say about Jesus earlier? Did you what's your take on Jesus?
There were many logos in the ancient world. Many who were born of a spiritual god and an earthly mother, right? You know, Zeus was fucking a lot of pretty girls. And they all had trials. Hercules had his trials. You know, in some way they died and were resurrected. The one that Christianity is built on, Asclepius. Most of his temples became Christian temples. Asclepius was a healer who got so good at it, he started raising the dead, which made the gods jealous. And then, so the gods killed him, and then another god had pity on him and said, no, we need this guy, and they raised him from the dead. The logos is that inner voice that comes out of us. When you listen to a real artist, when you view the painting of a real artist or the film of a real artist or a poet or what have you, or a great sage, you're listening to the logos coming out. It's what Jesus of the Gospel of Thomas is talking about. That which you have within you must be brought forth from you, and then it will save you. If not, it will destroy you. You'll be a zombie. You can't not listen to your bliss.
Where does that come from, though? I mean, you know, where does this logos come from? What world? I mean, the world must be more than we see if things like this can come forth from us.
Coming from inside of your psyche now. It's there. It doesn't come from somewhere else. It comes from you, me, other people. Anyone who reaches out, you guys are producing this program. You're putting a lot of love and you're experimenting with Gnosticism in the way that you know it. That's your logos. This program takes shape, and as it's taken shape, it wasn't necessarily what you thought you were starting out with. And you co-creatively make choices and respond to it. And that's the logos. The logos is everywhere and nowhere. The logos is the God speaking through you when you go into, you know, your utterances and that kind of trance. That's the logos. You know, anything that is a creative force in you is the logos.
Well, you said everywhere and nowhere. So to me, that means it's not really part of the matter, energy, space, and time universe, the Hylic universe.
Well, I say everywhere because we're all interconnected. Right. So we all share this collective consciousness. You know, everything is alive, but we as humans have come to consciousness. Rocks are alive, but they don't think. You know, plants are alive, but they don't think. Dogs are alive, but they don't really think. You know,
mine does. My dog definitely thinks.
Yours can plan and plot like most good dogs.
It does.
But it's all based on want and need, right? They know the world around them. They know how to use their body. But they're not sitting, pondering. You know, dogs know. Animals know. Humans know that they know. And that's the qualitative difference.
And we have symbolic thought. We've developed, you know, symbolic thought and the ability to manipulate internal models that model our own thought. We're reflexive.
Yeah. Well, even the great artists and novelists and everything else, really, when you look at their body of work, it's nothing but an exposition of their inner mind. I call it the Rosicrucian novel. You know, you paint enough paintings, we're going to know all about you eventually. Because your entire soul is going to be on a set of canvases. That is the logos. That's divinity speaking through you. That's your direct contact with the divine. You are the logos. When John came out and said, in the beginning there was the logos, he turned it around. Okay, because they're trying to pin your divinity on Jesus. And there was a reason to do that. You know, they were creating a religion. I'm sure in these other temples, you know, Hercules was the only god. But pagan culture in general, accepted all gods. You know, the Romans and the Greeks, they really didn't care what your gods were. You know, and so they were naturally syncretic. You know, another logos, Osiris of Egypt. He died and was resurrected. Just for a good lay, but you know, at least he was resurrected, you know what I'm saying? Or resurrected.
That's a common Gnostic thing, and the way I've seen it, you know, of all the different Gnostic groups, you know, the emphasis on personal divinity, so to speak, is the difference. And it's not, you know, we're just not these little worms, and Jesus was the only, you know, living God, you know.
Exactly.
The disconnection from God.
Just take that the next step. You are God of very God. So am I. You know. So where is the issue? Right? This is a planet of gods. Now, some are really way on the dark end of all of that, right? There's how many people live in third world situations? You know, and some are, you know, making love in the French Riviera and, you know, tapping the bank account to go downstairs and do a little gambling. You know, so everything in between or around, you know, or among. And everything that the human race does collectively is growing to greater and greater collective consciousness. You know, just like when you were younger, you didn't have so much of a consciousness and you didn't take care of your heart. You know, when you're older, you're going to pay for it, right? But your heart now becomes that third world country inside your body. You know, we are a collective body. There's a collective consciousness. Okay. We have to emerge from that collective consciousness to our individuality, to our own personal genius. But that's only to give back to the collective consciousness, to raise the bar.
Yeah, I think I would probably lean more towards Vance and Curry. You're wrong, Vance. But yeah, I do believe all is mind and all is God. But there is still, I would say, higher planes of reality, which I've experienced, and a bliss that it's unbelievable, plus powers. And I believe there are other forms of intelligence and entities beyond our senses, even beyond our mind. So I think that's where you and I stand, right, Vance? It's not all mind. It'd be nice.
All of that, no matter what, let's just pretend for a moment, because I also accept an idea of a transcendent experience beyond the scope of the mind or the soul, beyond the scope of I, right? Because when I get to that place, it's no matter that I get a glimpse of that or not, I still come back to mind, because that place is out of mind. Right, it's transcendent. So all I have when I come back to mind is maybe some inaccurate memory of that transcendent experience. You know, other levels of the mind, the unconscious, the archetypal unconscious, you know, all these other things can be explored. And yeah, they're non-physical. I'm not going to observe them with my physical eyes. But even then, I bring that all back to the duality of my intellect and my emotions. And I weigh that all in that context. So it all comes back to the ruach, to the soul. That's where it dwells. And in the middle of the soul is the heart. So that's why it says, I am the heart. And the snake is entwined about the invisible core of the mind. Now, that's the same snake that climbs the Gnostic cross. The snake of gnosis, of knowledge.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.